trusting someone with your money can feel like handing over the keys to your life. And that's why it's the most common question burning up my inbox. How do I find a financial advisor? And if I do find one, how do I make sure there's someone I can actually trust? Because when you start making decisions about your money, you will, at certain points, run into roadblocks, things you're unsure of. You might want some help. But this is your money we're talking about. These are decisions that are a big deal. And by definition, you're trying to find someone to help you with things that you don't understand. They know more than you do, which makes it a really unbalanced, stressful situation. So, welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. Brought to you with our friends at KiwiBank. I'm Frances Cook, a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. And today's episode has to be the most highly requested, so we are diving in. We want to find you a good advisor, not someone who will patronize you or sell you things that you don't need. So we're going to run through exactly what you need to know to find the right one, to feel confident, and most importantly, to not get ripped off. Making Sense is on a mission to make money simple, and I just couldn't do that without the support of KiwiBank. It's really important to me to only work with companies that understand that mission. And for KiwiBank, their purpose is to help Kiwi and Aotearoa be better off. So bringing you real stories of different approaches to finance is one of the ways they're making a difference to the lives of their customers. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. Now, first of all, do you even need a financial advisor? If you've ever Googled, what should I do with my money? You'll know there are about a million different answers you can get, and they all contradict each other. Or you feed it into ChatGPT and you get back what sounds like a very confident answer, but it might be based on information for someone who's in a totally different stage of life than you, or based on rules from overseas, which would totally change the game, or frankly, sometimes information that it is flat out made up. And I obviously think there's a lot we can do in terms of educating ourselves about money and what we can do on a DIY basis. I love DIYing. A good 90% of my finances are still DIY'd. I mean, that's the entire reason that this channel exists, to help you take control like that, to understand what the options are and to realize what is possible for you. Because what's possible for all of us is often far more than what we expected it to be. And once we know some of those paths that we can take, we often see there are more paths available and taking us further than we thought. However, even after saying all of that and my huge belief in the DIY approach, sometimes you do still need a guide. And it's not just for rich people, and it doesn't have to be super expensive. So, one rule of thumb for if you're thinking about whether you need a financial advisor or not is simply, are you facing a big money decision? So this could be something like you're buying your first home and the bank has just handed you a stack of paperwork that is thicker than the Lord of the Rings. And every time you're trying to read it, you are going cross-eyed. Or you've just had kids and suddenly you're wondering whether life insurance is a thing that you should be sorting out here. Or do they need KiwiSavers to set them up right? Or do you invest for them elsewhere? What's going on there? Or maybe you're hitting your 40s or 50s and you're starting to really think properly about retirement and you're questioning how much is enough and are you actually going to make it? Or you might be self-employed and you've got irregular income and you're trying to figure out whether you can invest without shooting yourself in the foot on the rest of your financial goals. Or there might be something else entirely. Look, we can all run into roadblocks or big life moments where we're thinking, okay, I've done a lot of self-education here, got a savings account. I've got started on a lot of this. Now I need someone to help me with the next bit. And a good financial advisor can help you look at the whole picture. Because if you've been here a while, you'll know money decisions aren't just about the numbers. I mean, I bang on about this all the time. I know, I'm sorry, you're sick to death of it. But money decisions are about your whole life priorities. Do you want to make a big swing and hope that it pays off? Or are you someone who prefers to go slow and steady? That's why one size fits all stuff out there on the internet isn't great. It's got to be fitted to you. Maybe your stage of life. If you're younger, you probably need a different KiwiSaver or investing strategy than someone who's 60 and is wanting to retire at 65. Learning about money by yourself, still fantastic. Still highly endorse it. It means you can have a good idea of the options open to you. And then, if you run into a roadblock or you need a little extra help, a financial advisor helps you cut through the noise, read through the fine print, and figure out the best way to adapt things to your personal situation. Advisors are professionals who can give you recommendations on specific products, like exactly which KiwiSaver might be best for you. And then strategies around that tailored to you, your goals, your life. They have to get a special qualification. They have to be licensed and registered to work in New Zealand. They're legally supposed to put your interests first. There's a disputes system if anything goes wrong. And they should help you make sense of things in plain language. So, as money decisions get a bit bigger, like buying a house, planning retirement, setting up investments, or protecting your family, if you're feeling out of your depth, that's where a second pair of eyes can save you from some sometimes costly mistakes. And another reason you might want an advisor is actually just accountability, a bit like a personal trainer. Especially something like investing, right? One reason that I'm a big fan of the start small approach is that investing is just scary at the beginning. The share market goes up and down. That's how it works. It's a feature, not a bug. It's all part of how you make money in the long term. So you actually don't want it to stop doing that horrible, bumpy ride. But no matter how much research you do and how well you know that that ride is coming, the first go round on that roller coaster, you're not going to like it. You're just not. Especially, you might think that you've been through some dips and you were fine, but the first big dip, you are going to say all of those things that you told yourself you wouldn't, like, this time it's different, this time it's a real crash, this time it's worse. When you've got money in there and the share market goes down, you are going to hate it. We all do. That first time round, the logic, the learning, it goes out the window and we hate it. It feels like we're losing money even if we technically know that we're not. That's why I like starting small, something like $5 a week, because if that happens, when you've got $100 in there, it's so much easier to say, I knew this was coming, and then to not panic and to stick to the plan. Then if you have $100,000 in there and you find out the market's gone down, it's going to freak you out a bit more. But once it's happened a few times, you have the confidence of having gone through it before, you've built up a bit of resilience to it. So if you've built up that money slowly, you get used to it. However, that's not always how life goes, is it? Maybe you get a big inheritance. Or you get a really big pay rise, and so you're going for it. I'm putting this money to work, this is how it's going. Or you've saved up a lot of money, before realizing that actually maybe you should invest it instead. For whatever reason, you can end up with a big chunk of change and you don't get that slow start on ramp. Now, those sorts of situations, an advisor could be really useful to help you set up a plan that works for you, but also to save you from yourself if you get emotional. A good advisor can be like a coach who keeps you calm, stops you from making knee-jerk decisions, and reminds you of the big picture. They've gone through it before instead of you. However, not all advisors are created equal. So they can have different specialties, and sometimes there are sharks. That's life, that's people. So now we're going to get to know these advisors a bit better. So what can and can't a financial advisor do? A financial advisor is someone who's both qualified and registered in order to give you advice. So I'm going to use myself as an example here, because sometimes people will message me wanting me to have a sit-down session with them where I help them figure out what's going on with their money. And that is so lovely. I really appreciate that you trust me so much. I can't. I am qualified as a financial advisor, and I did that to make sure that I understand what I'm talking about and can give you proper information here. I take this really seriously. However, step two is that financial advisors then have to register to give you that one-to-one advice in New Zealand. And that's not what I do for a business. I don't work with people one-on-one, so I don't pay that very steep registration fee in order to then practice as a financial advisor. So that means I can talk to you about money and the general rules of the game. I can't tell you specifically which investment to put money into. I can't recommend products. And you shouldn't trust anyone online who does, because that is individual financial advice and against the law. When you go to see someone who is a registered financial advisor, you want them to be both qualified and registered, because that's what gives you full legal protection if anything happens. That registration process means they legally have to put your interests first, disclose how they're paid, and operate under a code of conduct. And you can check if someone is registered, and do, because, you know, there are sharks around. What you do is you go to the Financial Service Providers Register. That'll be on screen here. For those listening to the audio, just Google Financial Service Providers Register, and you should have that pop straight up. So you can search people on there, make sure that they are registered. They can't be registered if they're not qualified, so it also checks their qualifications there, and that's great. That's just your very first litmus test. So, okay, legal stuff sorted. But then what can they actually do for you? So there are three main specialties, which is mortgages, insurance, and investments, which includes KiwiSaver. Now, some advisors are what you'd call full service. They can look across a wide range of products, KiwiSaver, investments, retirement planning, insurance, mortgages, everything. They can pull all the strands together, give you a full financial plan that connects all the dots. And others are specialists, and they only do one area. Others could even be what you would call more of a sales rep, and they only sell one type of insurance, or they are tied to one bank's mortgage products, or they're restricted to just a handful of investment funds. They're still advisors, but their advice is limited by the products that they've got access to. So, first of all, what do you actually want help with is a pretty important thing to think about. And we'll talk more a bit later about vetting questions, but it's worth mentioning here too. One of the very first things you should ask is, what products do you actually consider when you make recommendations? Because if the answer is limited to just the ones that my company sells, well, it's up to you. Do you feel like that's advice or a sales pitch? If you're already thinking about going to that company, cool, great. But just make sure, if you're wanting to know all the options open to you, that you're talking to an advisor who can give you all the options. So now let's flip it around. What advisors can't cover? They can't give you legal advice. If you need to do something like set up a trust or do estate planning or write a will, that's for a lawyer. They might spot the need and send you in that direction. They might have a lawyer that they can recommend to you, but they can't do it themselves. They also can't do your tax returns. They should know enough about tax to stop you from making any silly mistakes and maybe give you a heads up if you're going to run into a bit of a tax issue on something. But anything beyond that, you're going to need an accountant. And they can't make decisions for you. They can tell you what they think you need. They can help you make a plan. They can print out forms, talk you through them, help you figure out that fine print, but you still sign the forms and you have to own that decision. And this also means that, you know, I talked before about accountability. If you panic at some stage and they try to talk you through it and they're being that accountability partner, but you tell them, no, seriously, I want you to sell everything, because you're freaking out, they will have to do it. They have to do what you tell them to. So even though they can guide you, remember, you're still an active part of this. And that's why I love that you're on this channel. We're learning about money together. It's good. It's really important that you also are taking an active role and you know what you want to happen with your money, even if you've got someone to help you through the nitty-gritty. And most importantly, an advisor still can't see the future. They don't know where house prices will be in 10 years. They can make a good guess. They might have a really good educated guess. But they don't know. They don't know whether the share market will crash next month. None of us saw COVID happening and that cratering in share prices. And certainly a lot of people didn't see the really fast bounce back either. A good advisor will admit that uncertainty to you and build you a plan that works even when life throws curveballs, because it does. We know it, we hate it, it does. Curveballs are coming. So financial advisors can be incredibly helpful, but they're not magic. They can guide you, they can simplify complicated things, and they can hopefully at least delay you from making expensive mistakes. But you still want to go in there, eyes open, knowing what you want, at least out of life, and then let's make the money match, so they can help you get it. And that's why I'm super glad you're here, because we'll just keep on learning more about money together so that you and your advisor can be a superstar team together. Life looks different for everyone. Maybe you're buying your first home, growing your whānau, dreaming of travel, or simply trying to stay on top of things. KiwiBank has the tools to help you manage your money your way. Find out more at kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. Okay, so how do advisors make their money? And can you trust them? Everyone's in business to make money. I don't have a problem with that. You go to work to make money too. That doesn't mean you don't do a good job. But I do think the how you get paid does influence things. So, options for how your advisor gets paid. Option one, commission. This is a super common model, especially for insurance and mortgages. This means the advisor doesn't charge you directly. Instead, they are paid by the provider when they sign you up. And maybe it's an insurance company, maybe it's a fund manager, maybe it's a bank. Now, it depends what field you're in here. Now, mortgages, commission is pretty much the only way that this works, which it's fine. It's industry standard. That means the mortgage advisor is free to you. They get paid by the bank. They're paid pretty similar amounts when they sign you up. It's not really that big a deal in the mortgage space. If it's investments, I pause a little bit more. Here is why. At first glance, commission can look really great for you, the customer, right? You get advice and you don't see a bill. So win-win, right? Here's the rub. If someone's income depends on steering you into certain products, how can you be sure what they're recommending is best for you rather than best for their commission? In the investments world, there are wildly different amounts of commission depending on which product they recommend to you. And what worries me is that even if someone has really good intentions, are they not even subconsciously swayed by knowing they get a bigger commission if they send you to one investment rather than another? And it also, depending on how the commission works, it's not even that cheap, really. It can end up tacking on a cost to you just in a different way. If it's a commission that happens year after year after you sign up, this is what they call trail. So you sign up one time, but they keep getting a commission on you staying with that provider if you're there year after year. That means you're still technically paying for it, whether directly or indirectly. You are probably paying higher fees for that investment than you could elsewhere because your advisor is getting paid. So it's actually not that cheap anymore. And I've talked elsewhere about compounding interest. This can hugely eat into what you earn from your investments. That a little percentage is big in the investment world, especially take it over a few years. It can be tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. It really depends. Advisors can commonly earn anywhere from 0.25% to 1% of your investment balance each year. So on a $100,000 portfolio, that's $250 to $1,000. Going to the advisor every year. But that's also money that would have been in there earning, and everything that it had earned would have gone on to earn for you as well. So the impact of that fee goes out in a big old ever-expanding triangle where it eats more and more and more in lost potential money you would have had each year and the earnings on that and the earnings. And this is why compounding interest is so powerful, but it's also why fees are so dangerous, because it looks small, but it's not. Or on insurance, you know, upfront commissions can be even higher, sometimes thousands of dollars just for writing the policy. There's also something that I just want to flag with you called soft commission, which is even murkier again. These aren't just cash payments. They can be freebies, overseas trips, must be nice, conferences in luxury resorts under the guise of education, but actually everyone's just having a nice holiday. If you want to actually do education, there's very cheap ways to do it. It doesn't have to be in a big old resort. Now, these soft commissions and kickbacks, they're a little harder to spot because they're not in the fees disclosure. And this one, I think, it's harder for you to figure it out. I think the best way is to just have a conversation. Sometimes you may not get a direct answer, but I think you're going to get enough of an answer to trust your instincts. So say something along the lines of, do you have a particular relationship with any of these fund providers? Have you had reimbursement or gifts from them that I should be aware of? And the legal aspect of this is a little harder. So it might be hard to get a straight answer because technically there's nothing wrong with it and it's kind of hard for them to disclose. Probably I think the best you can hope for on this is to get a big old green flag situation where they say something like, oh, absolutely not. We have a company policy against accepting gifts or trips. That's probably a really big green flag and is easier than looking for a red flag here. A red flag would be if they're a bit fluffy or evasive about it. Just trust your gut. These gut instincts have been honed over thousands of years. Anytime I've run into problems is when I've ignored a gut instinct. Trust your gut on how they respond to that question and how you feel about it. I want to be sure, personally, that my advisor is keen on a particular fund because it's right for me, not their AirPoints balance. Now, the good news on this is that they have to disclose all actual commissions to you and make sure you understand them. Soft commissions, harder, but the direct commissions, there are legal rules there. They have to run you through all of that, ideally in writing. So ask. Ask clarifying questions. Don't feel shy on this one. It's really important. And once you have the information, up to you what you want to do with it. Now, option two, they might be paid in fees from you. Some advisors operate on a fee for service model. You pay them directly, maybe a flat fee for a consultation or an hourly rate, or sometimes a percentage of the assets that they manage for you. Now, this feels a bit more transparent to me because you see the money leaving your account. It's going straight to them. There's no hidden freebies and things like that. But even here, you do still need to read the fine print. There are people that would argue that the percentage of assets model gives them an incentive to keep as much of your money under their management as possible. There are other arguments that a flat fee doesn't guarantee quality, which, I mean, nothing does. You still have to do other due diligence, but yeah, sure. It just means, of course, you're footing the bill up front. To me personally, I would still prefer this. My personal opinion is that it's very difficult for people to put their self-interest aside and give truly unbiased advice. And I would prefer to pay for the advisor myself and be sure that they're not even subconsciously swayed by the idea of any commission that they get from my financial choices. But that is me. You might feel comfortable with a different method. Do what works for you. Just know your options. Now, option three is hybrid. Some advisors blend both models. Maybe they'll charge you a consultation fee and then also take a commission from the product provider. Now, this one's interesting because sometimes this means it's a bit of a cheaper model. So they might not charge you as much upfront. And it's also reducing the impact of a commission because they're not entirely reliant on those. Other times it's a way for them to double dip. So just read their fee structure and have a look at it. Again, you just need to make sure you know what's going on and then trust your gut on how that makes you feel. And remember, however your advisor gets paid, they must tell you. So under FMA rules, that's the Financial Markets Authority, that's our money police, advisors in New Zealand are legally required to tell you everything about how they make their money and whether it causes any conflict of interest. If they dodge the question or they're wrapping it in jargon, if at any point you're feeling confused, that could well be a tactic and it is a massive red flag. If they're a good advisor, they'll respect you even more for asking these questions. If they squirm, that's still an answer. I would say it's time to walk. Which leads us neatly to the next big question. Now that you know what you're looking for and the questions to ask, how do you actually vet a financial advisor? Okay, so a few filters when we're looking for a financial advisor. I like to say you want to create a shortlist of at least three of them who you like the look of, and then you make an appointment to see which one of those three is the right one for you. But of course, how do you shortlist? Here are some filters. Step one, ask around. Word of mouth, still a great way to find someone good. Ask your friends, ask your family, ask your coworkers. Have they used someone? Did they like them? What was the plan like? Personal experience tells you things that no glossy website ever will. Step two, use the directories. I really like the Financial Advice NZ website, which is just financialadvice.nz, nice and simple. It's a professional membership organization for New Zealand advisors, which means that everyone there should be qualified and registered to work in New Zealand. And they have a directory that lets you search people by geographic area and also their financial specialty, which I think is helpful. MoneyHub also has a really solid roundup of advisors across the country, again, broken down by region. And they are careful to say it's not a recommendation, it's just a starting point, which is fair. But those are some easy places. If you and everyone you know has never worked with an advisor before, there are some spots to look. And step three, narrow it down by specialty. We talked about earlier, not all advisors can do everything. So whether you want mortgage help, investments, a mix, make sure you're finding someone who's qualified in your area to help with your problem. Step four, check that they are legit. As I mentioned earlier, in New Zealand, anyone giving financial advice has to be registered on the Financial Service Providers Register. It's run by the FMA. You can search it online and it'll show you whether they're licensed, who they work for, and what services they are allowed to provide. And this is super important, this filter. If they're not on that register, run, don't walk away, no exceptions. Step five, interview them. You'll definitely want to have a chat before signing on with them officially. Like I say, make a short list of at least three, get in touch to find out if you're a good fit. Now, most advisors will offer you the first meeting for free, and that's for a really good reason. You want to make sure that you're a personality match as well as a financial match. A good advisor should talk to you about your life goals, your values, what freaks you out financially, and what makes you feel secure. They should not only ask you about this stuff, but then really listen to the answer. As well as the other legal things we've talked about in this video, a good question to ask them is, how have you helped other people in a similar situation to me? And it's a giant red flag if you feel talked down to, or if they don't seem to understand your goals, or if they even make you feel bad for asking questions. These are signs of a bad fit. And if you see any of that, I would move on to someone else straight away. They do not deserve your money. Step six, we're going two hands now. Trust your gut. This is underrated. You don't have to become besties with an advisor, but you do need to feel comfortable asking them the dumb questions. You're going to have dumb questions. That's why you're there. That's what you're paying them for. If you feel judged, dismissed, or rushed in that first meeting, it's not going to get better over time. So here's something to keep in mind. You're not locked in. If you work with someone for a while and then you feel like it's not the right fit, you can also change advisors. You just repeat this process and you find someone new. This is not a marriage. Don't stay stuck with someone who doesn't serve you just because you started with them. When should you leave? Well, let's talk some red flags. Red flag one, guarantees. If someone promises you guaranteed high returns, no risk, run. For context, the share market has, on average, produced about 7 to 10% returns each year, depending on how you calculate that number. But even then, some years it's up, some years it's down. It's not guaranteed each and every year. That is an average. So I actually get really annoyed when people say, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. Because You need the context of what's normal before you know what's too good to be true. But you can do things like looking up those average numbers to give you an idea. If you know that the share market usually does that, and then they're saying, I'll give you 30% and it's every year and no worries, you know that that's a wild claim, right? Real investing involves a bit of risk and some uncertainty. It just needs to be managed, and you need to have a plan that includes that. And a good advisor is totally upfront about it. Red flag two, vagueness. They give you lots of jargon, vague answers instead of plain language. That's not a sign of intelligence. It's a smoke screen. There's a quote somewhere, I haven't looked it up, but it goes along the lines of it being a sign of high intelligence to make something complicated sound really simple. And I just think that is so true. It's also a good mark that someone doesn't have an ego, because egotistical people love to make it sound complicated and confuse other people. Who needs that in their life? It's like when you go to see maybe Cirque du Soleil, right? And you're watching and you think, oh, maybe I could do that. That doesn't look so hard. And then you go home and you nearly break your neck trying. You turn to your partner and say, how did they do that? I just nearly died. So a good advisor might not be flying through the air, but, you know, they can still make things clearer and not more confusing. They should do the financial version of those acrobatics and making it look really simple and easy. That's their job. And if they can't do that job, red flag run. Red flag three, pressure tactics. So saying things like, sign now, the deal won't be available tomorrow, or everyone else is jumping into this fund, don't miss out. If you feel rushed or peer pressured or anything else along those lines, that's sales, not advice. Take your time. Take some documents home with you to think about it. A couple of days shouldn't hurt things. Red flag four, one-size-fits-all solutions. If their first suggestion is the same fund, the same policy, the same mortgage structure that they recommend to everyone else, that's lazy at best and dishonest at worst. Your age, your values, your goals, they all totally change things. That's why you've gone to see a specialist in the first place. Your situation is unique. Your advice should be too. Red flag five is they talk down to you. If they ever get defensive, dismissive, act like you're dumb for asking something, that is not someone to trust with your money. They haven't earned it. They're not treating you well. Get out of there. There's no such thing as a dumb question. You hired them for a reason, to guide you through this. If they don't want to do the job you're paying them for, then good. You can hire someone else. A good advisor will actually respect you more for asking because it shows that you're serious. They'll answer clearly, they'll explain the jargon, and they won't mind being challenged. You wouldn't hire, at least I hope not, you wouldn't hire a babysitter for your kids without asking a few questions, right? You'd want to know their experience, what they charge, how they handle any sort of emergencies, and an advisor is a babysitter for your money. So if it doesn't feel right, you can always say, thanks, and just walk away. So the TLDR, look, we've covered a lot today. This video went longer than I thought it would. And frankly, I've been putting off making it for a long time because there's a lot of ground to cover. So recap, you might want an advisor pretty much at any stage of life, but they can be particularly helpful at a big life moment. We're thinking buying a home, starting a family, planning for retirement, those sorts of things. They tend to cover three main areas: mortgages, insurance, and investments. Investments includes KiwiSaver, but some cover more than one. They can get paid by commission, fees, or a mix of both. But here's the big thing that I really want you to remember. No one will ever care about your money as much as you do. That doesn't mean you have to do it all alone. It just means you need to be the one in the driver's seat. A good advisor is a co-pilot, but they're not the pilot. That's you. They can guide you, steady you when markets wobble, and they can help you stick to a plan, which is all very helpful stuff, but it's still your journey. So be picky, be curious, ask tough questions, and if you don't like the answer, remember, you just say thanks and walk out the door and try someone else on your shortlist. All right, that's it for this episode of Making Sense. If it helped you out, don't forget to hit subscribe and send it to a friend who might find it useful too. That way we can all get better with money together. But until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.